Our next case is In Re Trust of Wagoner. Council may approach. Appellant ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may approach.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court and counsel. My name is Ben Wagner, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellants, who are Gerald Wagner, Robert Wagner, Randall Wagner, I'm sorry, Mark Wagner and Randall Wagner. And since everybody involved in this case has the last name of Wagner, if it's okay, I'd like to just refer to them by first name. we're basically here today as a result of an order that was issued by the Platte County Court in December of 2021 with respect to a petition the appellants had filed with respect to a modification of an irrevocable trust. And that irrevocable trust is basically a special needs trust that was put together for their brother, Stephen Wagoner. And the court ultimately found, with respect to the ultimately petition that was filed and the hearing that was held on the case, that the trust had two previous amendments that were done to it, and that those previous amendments were valid, and that in fact changed the trustee of the trust, and that the petitioners, in this case the appellant's petition, was denied, and the court reinstated or stated that Ms. Robin Wagner, who's the appellant's sister-in-law, was the actual trustee of the trust. Now, the story starts back in 2006 with the appellant's mother and father, who are Emmert and Rita Wagner. They put together two trusts at the time, a revocable trust for each of them with regard to their assets. And at the same time, they also created a trust for their son, Stephen, a special needs trust, as Stephen needs some special care and attention given his unique issues that he has. And when that trust was put together, Rita and Emmert originally named themselves as co-trustees and then named their boys, who would be all the appellants plus their other brother, Richard, who later passed away, as the successor trustees. After that, those trusts were put together, Rita ended up passing away, and Emmert took over those roles as the trustee for a few years. And ultimately, back in 2008, he amended the trust, the special needs trust, to name himself as the sole trustee, and then his son, Richard, as a successor trustee, and then the other boys, the appellants in this case, as the second successor trustees. At the time that that was done, only Emmert signed it as a settlor and trustee of the trust. None of the other beneficiaries, who would be the appellants in this case, as well as their other brother, Richard, knew about the amendment. They didn't consent to it. They were never notified about it. In fact, the evidence shows that the only person who executed that at the time was Emmert.
So to jump ahead of here a little bit, you have two amendments, right? The 2008 and 2010, and I think everybody would agree that all the interested parties at that time didn't sign it. The issue here clearly comes up in the 2016 settlement agreement, where they ultimately, now the interested parties do. The position here is that that's a ratification of the 2008 and 2010 amendments by virtue of the fact that they acknowledged that those amendments were valid and told the court to authorize Richard to sign, you know, on behalf of that special needs trust. How is that not a ratification? Why is the court wrong in saying that this isn't a 30-38-11 agreement?
So under 30-38-11, that's a non-judicial settlement agreement that the lower court relied upon in finding that those amendments were valid. The fact of the matter is that a non-judicial settlement agreement, particularly in this case, for that to affect the trust, it really has to be about the trust. And in this instance, that non-judicial settlement agreement, or that family settlement agreement, was really about a division of property and assets out of the two revocable trusts that Rita and Emmert established for themselves. It didn't deal with the trust in terms of changing the trustee. It didn't discuss anything about the modifications or prior amendments to those trusts. It just mentioned them simply as amendment dates.
But by telling the court that now Richard, as trustee, pursuant to those amendments, has the authority to execute on behalf of it, haven't they in fact ratified those trusts?
Well, that goes back to the original trust and what the appellants knew about the time in 2006. They knew at the time that they were the successor trustees and that their parents were the original trustees. When their parents died, all of them under that original agreement would be the trustees. Somebody, in fact, has to be able to sign for that trust. Not all of them can or should sign. And somebody should be designated in that agreement to do so. And nothing in that agreement talks about those amendments or that Richard, in fact, became the trustee back in 2010 through the Second Amendment. Rather, if you read the first paragraph of that family settlement agreement, it lists Richards as the successor trustee, which the boys understood, or the appellants understood him to be, as well as all of them, under that first trust back in 2006. The fact of the matter is simply having that put in there didn't raise any issues or didn't raise any concern or anything that would be unusual. But in fact, the evidence showed in this case that Richard sort of kind of took that primary lead role in dealing with Stephen at the time of, during his lifetime. And that makes sense because you have potentially five trustees. Not all of them can act, not all of them do things. But one of them has to take that lead. It's sort of kind of like any board of directors or, I mean, HOA board of directors, for example, is a good example. It seems like there's always one person kind of having to do stuff, and in that case, it was Richard. And nothing was unusual about that. Somebody had to sign for that. And it didn't list these were the amendments and here's what changed through those trusts. Rather, what it did was to just list those and named him as a successor trustee in that opening paragraph. If those amendments were valid, he would have been the active ongoing trustee and would have been designated as such. But he wasn't. It's very specifically stated the successor trustee. And in order to qualify under the provisions of 3811, one of the big issues, there has to be some kind of knowledge or notice of what changes were being made to the trust. There has to be an agreement as to what those changes were. There is nothing in that family settlement agreement that discusses those changes, why those changes were made, or what the effect of them were. It just lists the amendments. And furthermore, the other issue with that is gets back into then section 3809 and this notice requirement. And under that, it has to be sort of reasonable notice that would put you on notification that something's going to be changing. And to have this family settlement agreement 8 years after the First Amendment and 6 years after the Second Amendment can hardly be timely. It fails that notification requirement there because at some point in time, those amendments, because they weren't properly done, have to become stale.
So if we accepted your argument, then the 2016 family settlement agreement was invalid too because nobody signed on behalf of the special needs trust, right?
No, that's not true at all because the fact of the matter is if there was a person that was designated to sign on behalf of that was Rich.
But wasn't that under the amendments? Only reason Richard had the ability to sign was because he was named in one of the amendments.
No, he was also a successor trustee under the 2006, the original trust. And so the original trustees of that 2006 trust when it was created were Rita and Emmert. Both of them had passed. Therefore, the successor trustees at that time would have been the appellants and Richard, Stephen's five brothers. Somebody has to be, and in that...
Did that empower any one of them to act alone, the original trust?
So
did they have to act as a group?
No, so
the successor trustees.
So the original trust says that any one of them can act, or any combination of them can act, because it says that when the successor trustees are determined, or if they're there, none of them necessarily have to act, but the other ones can act in their stead. And in this case, you have five brothers, close, all this is farming family. At the time, Randall and Richard were farming together. Somebody needs to take that sort of a lead role, and the brothers were okay with Richard taking that lead role at the time. And in that family settlement agreement, you fast forward, in that very introductory paragraph where it mentions those amendments, it names Richard not as trustee, but as successor trustee. And that makes sense because somebody has to sign on behalf of the trust at the time. And any one of those, any one of the appellants or Richard could have done it, but somebody has to be designated to do so, and that's exactly what happened.
Then why even mention the 2008 and 2010 amendments in the settlement agreement?
That's a good question. It's something I couldn't answer for you, why it was there, but the fact of the matter was those couldn't have been effective at the time, given the amount of time that lapsed and the fact that they're ineffective. And if you did mention those at the time, then why not mention Richard, what he was in that capacity as a trustee? Rather, they named him as a successor trustee. There was nothing that would have put these guys necessarily on notice that anything had changed other than from the 2006 trust.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Kathy Trent Villam, and I represent the appellee in this case, Robin Wagner. Ms. Wagner is asking the court to affirm the decision of the trial court finding that the amendments were incorporated and included in the nonjudicial settlement agreement that the parties signed in December of 2016. I think this case presents an unusual set of facts because there really aren't any disputed facts. Nobody contends that that Emmert did not sign the two amendments. No one contests that Richard signed to the extent that he signed those two amendments. No one is here alleging that Robin did anything to unduly influence or coerce Emmert into signing those. Nobody's questioning the extent to which Richard and Robin were involved in Stephen's care. And nobody's questioning the extent to which Emmert was relying on their assistance as the basis for why he chose them as trustees. And so in that sense, the facts really are not at all in dispute. The only question is, what was the legal effect of the amendments and to the extent that they were referenced and incorporated into the nonjudicial settlement agreement? And so in that sense, Your Honor, to the extent that they are asking the court to undo those amendments, they're really asking the court to violate the primary principle of Nebraska law, which is to effectuate the settlor's intent. And in this case, you don't have to look at the four corners of the document and try to glean intent from the words, because Emmert tells us exactly what he wanted, and he tells us why he wanted Richard first and then Robin to be the successor trustees. Now, I understand their position is that Richard was acting as a successor trustee under the original agreement, which they all concede they had. But the simple fact of the matter is, as this court has acknowledged, I think all three of you, there's no way that Richard could have acted unilaterally under that agreement because he had no authority under the original trust agreement to act unilaterally. The only way that he was able to act was through his role as successor trustee in the First Amendment, which was then superseded by the Second Amendment. And so by the time we get to December of 2016 and he is signing on behalf of the trust with everyone's agreement and consent, the only way that he is able to do that is under the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment is also the amendment that names Robin as the successor trustee. And so to the extent that they want to take the position that they weren't aware that there were amendments in the first place, I think that's belied by the fact that those amendments are referenced in the family settlement agreement. Certainly they were on inquiry notice. If they didn't know what those amendments said, they were on inquiry notice. And all of the brothers who testified, including those who testified by stipulation, all agree that nobody made any kind of inquiry. So if they went into the family settlement agreement not knowing the import of those amendments, they did so voluntarily, they did so knowingly, and they did so willfully. And by finding that they are bound by that agreement, the county court certainly didn't commit any error in holding them to the terms of the agreement. Now, I know that they say that the trust can only be considered an amendment, that the family settlement agreement doesn't really change Stephen's trust because there's nothing that it did. But the reality is it did do something, because what it did is it identified specifically Richard as the trustee. And under their theory, he didn't have that authority to serve as trustee. So they went into the court, they said, Judge, he is the trustee, we're going to allow him to sign. We're asking the court to judicially bless this agreement that all the parties agree they signed, And now they want to back out of that agreement and say, wait a minute, we didn't really know what we were getting into. And the law says you don't get to do that. You don't get to reap the benefits of the bargain that you struck and then come back years later and deny that you are bound by the agreement that you've now benefited from. And as much as they want to pretend that there was no benefit, there's no question that they benefited, because under the two trusts, their parents' trusts, they took a 1/6 of 1/2 interest in all of the real estate. And by virtue of that family settlement agreement, they were able to take fee simple interests in portions of it, and then Richard's trust, instead of getting a 1/6 of 1/2 divided interest, was able to receive cash as part of his agreement.
So what is the agreement? Is it the combination of the 2008 trust, 2010 trust, and the 2016 settlement agreement? We consider that all together and say that is a 3811 settlement agreement?
Yeah, the agreement is that Richard is acting as trustee under the trust and the two amendments, which are specifically referenced in the family settlement agreement. And as part of that, the brothers are going to take certain fee simple title. They're going to make certain cash payments to equalize those. And then Stephen's trust is going to receive a cash distribution instead of any property. That was the agreement that they struck. They specifically asked the court to go in and to modify both Rita's and Emmert's trusts in order to allow those different distributions to be made. And as part of that, they specifically didn't ask for Stephen's trust to be amended because they were already doing that as part of this process by asking the court to give Richard, as trustee, authority to sign. And again, the only way that Richard could do that was by virtue of the Second Amendment.
Under 3811, you can use it so long as it doesn't violate a material purpose.
Absolutely.
I think they make some argument in there that this violates a material purpose. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. There is no way that this amendment violates a material term. The court has said that the designation of a trustee by the settlor is to be given significant importance or significant weight in deciding whether or not that is a material component of the trust. To the extent that Emmert specifically designated Richard and then Robin and specified why, after he had an opportunity to observe and work with them in their capacity as trustees, I think demonstrates that to the extent there was any materiality to the identity of the trustee, it was material that Robin serve and not one of the other brothers, unless Robin could not serve. Yes, there is a provision in the trust agreement, in the original trust agreement, saying that they want to maintain contact between the brothers, but that provision is only included to make it clear to the trustee that the trustee can expend funds to make sure that they're allowed to do that. So if somebody needs gas money, if they want to go on a vacation together so that they can maintain that contact, the trust agreement authorizes them to do that. But there's nothing in the trust agreement that would suggest that that language was intended to create a material term that the brothers serve as the trustee. And the court has said that materiality should not be easily inferred. And so I don't think that there's anything in that language that would support the idea that this amendment would violate the terms. In addition to that, Your Honor, 3811 specifically includes changes of trustee as part of the components of what a family settlement agreement can do. And so it would be really difficult to find that a material term has been violated when they're doing exactly what the statute anticipates and allows. But above and beyond the family settlement agreement, I think there are other grounds to affirm Emmert's amendments and to make sure that his intent is effectuated. And there were a couple of things. First, you have 30-3837, which is a consent provision. And consistent with the same reasons that there was consent as part of the nonjudicial settlement agreement, there was also consent for the amendments under 3038-7. A and B. There's also 30-30.
We don't get to that if we agree that it's 3811.
Absolutely. Right? I agree with you, Your Honor. These were alternatives that were pled. The trial court, having ultimately decided that it was part of the family settlement agreement, also apparently decided that he didn't need to reach those issues. But to the extent that this court is allowed to affirm on alternative grounds, I just wanted to make sure that we touched on those issues.
Before you do that, I think there's a citation to Fenske. Are you
familiar with the In Re Estate of Fenske? That's where the Supreme Court looked at and said a change of a trustee.
Yes.
In violent material purpose. How does that differ than what we have?
If I'm thinking of the right case, Your Honor, I think what the court did is it affirmed the trial court's decision not to allow a modification because it found that allowing that modification would violate a material terms of the trust.
And it was a change of trustee.
And it was a change of trustee. And in that case, the evidence, the court found that the evidence was pretty clear that the settler did not want a member of his family managing the trust. They described him as a frugal individual. He wanted to make sure that there was going to be sufficient funds for later generations. They had counsel testify as to what his intent was. And they also had evidence of the relationship of between the settler and the trustee that he designated. And to the extent that the beneficiaries all came in and consented, but wanted to appoint a family member, namely, I believe it would have been a son-in-law of the settler, the court said no. The settler was clear that he wanted somebody outside of the family, somebody what they called independent, to manage the trust. And to the extent that you are now trying to usurp the settler's express intent, we're not going to do that because the designation of that particular trustee was a material term, and allowing the modification would violate that. And the court said, we're not going to allow that. So.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I don't believe there was any time for rebuttal. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. So thank you. The case is submitted. You're both excused. I appreciate you being here, and we'll get you a decision down the road. Thank you.